Today's episode of True Crime Tuesday is brought to you by Blue Chew. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code DARKNESS at checkout and just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code DARKNESS to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring our podcast. Welcome in to the best in true crime podcasting. This is True Crime Tuesday. I'm Tim Dennis. A little different show for you today. We're ripped from the headlines. We're going to take some of those headlines you may or may not have heard of. No, we're not going to cover the killer in Utah today. Sorry, that's been hashed over and over and over again in the headlines. We're going to take some headlines, some true crime headlines you may or may not have heard about or heard from. One of them has been circulating in the news quite a bit. We'll cover that one. It's a little too sexy for your radio. Or is it? It might be a little too gross for your radio or your listening device. That's a not safe for work one we'll cover here in just a moment. So ripped from the headlines, dumb crime, stupid criminals today. In order to do so, we need a co-host. A co-host with the most, the co-host that is big and cuddly, the BCB, the big cuddly bear himself, Beer City Bruiser. Bruiser, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. We're not going to discuss the Idaho guy that just won't get off my TV screen, will we?
No, you know what? Although it is a fascinating case, I think you can only go so far with it. And I think we've mined all the information we can out of that deal.
Yeah, there's nothing new coming out till June when he goes to court.
You know, now when we're going over the stop on the side of the road and we're just constantly going over the state of his eyebrows at the
same time. Yeah, exactly.
I think we've mined that thing. We've mined that sucker too much.
Yeah, when he first got caught, I was really obsessed with this because I love serial killers and I've just been fascinated by him. Mm-hmm. And it's to the point now, there's no new information coming out. It's like, all right, guys, find a new story to latch onto. We need that next big thing.
Yeah, there was a story out there that I thought about digging up today that said he might have had access to the WSU crime lab. And I thought, no, you know what? That it'd be obvious if he was doing some student teaching that he would have had access to the crime lab.
Exactly. He was a teacher's assistant. He had access to everything.
Yeah. So that's a little too obvious for words. Instead, we're going to rip from the headlines. We're going to do some stuff you might not have heard of. And there's some chilling crimes out there that we're going to cover today. Bruiser, should we jump into it?
Yeah, let's jump into it. Let's see how chilling we can get. And then we'll lighten up at the end.
That's right. Then we lighten up with the second half of the program with dumb crimes, stupid criminals. California man is accused of killing and dismembering his girlfriend and hiding her remains in an orchard.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I want to do that.
Yeah, we go to Fresno, California. A 22-year-old man was arrested in connection with the brutal slaying and dismemberment of his 24-year-old girlfriend. On Monday, January 9th, at approximately 10 p.m., Fresno County Sheriff's deputies responded to a home on South Hayes Avenue near Raisin City to a report of domestic violence. Their deputies were reportedly met by Cameron Wright. Upon further investigation, the sheriff's office said investigators developed evidence that he committed a murder. Approximately 2 miles from the home, deputies reportedly found the dismembered body of Wright's girlfriend, Samantha Sharp, in an orchard. Detectives and the Sheriff's Office Crime Scene Unit responded to the scene and gathered evidence from the slaying. According to the Sheriff's Office, although the coroner's office believes the victim to be Sharp, they still have to formally confirm her identity. Wright was arrested for homicide, according to the Sheriff's Office. The Sheriff's Office did not disclose how the victim died.
That's sad that's happening, but I don't get why people try to dismember people now to hide murders with DNA evidence out there and all the, you know, the groundbreaking radar and the dog cadaver dogs, like all that. It's hard to hide a body nowadays.
It is.
You're going to get found.
It is. And through advanced forensics, it's pretty hard to hide the way you did the body or how you murdered the body. And then, there's not a lot of ways to hide the crime you did.
No, I was told by a forensic specialist that the minute you step into a room, there's evidence that you were there. whether you think there is or not, no matter how much you try to hide it, you can't hide everything. There's still evidence that you were in that room. So imagine committing a murder, especially a violent murder. You can clean up all you want. There's still going to be evidence that you were in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Scary stuff, I tell you.
And then hiding in an orchard, that I get maybe why he did it, but there's still picking season. Like, you still have to go into that orchard to get stuff.
Right. And there's, well, and here's the thing, you're in California. It's not like you have a really harsh winter to hide the evidence of what you've done. There's no decay. There's no weathering. There's nothing like that. Although they've had some pretty bad floods in Northern California. This is Fresno. So it's not like, you know, you've got real bad weather to hide the details of what's going on with the body.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And not to get real gruesome about it, but that's just the way it is. A California man has been sentenced to life for stabbing his boyfriend, or it might be her boyfriend. I have to look here. No, it's his boyfriend. 93 times on the side of a rural road in Texas.
That's a lot of anger.
That is. That's an angry crime. A 25-year-old man was sentenced to life in federal prison this week for traveling from San Diego and stabbing his boyfriend over 90 times on a rural road in Texas. On Thursday, January 12th, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Texas announced that Alexander Yoichi Duberic's official sentencing had taken place. He pleaded guilty to one count of interstate domestic violence, resulting in death in July of 2022. On October 31st of 2020, Duberic flew from San Diego to Plainview, Texas, where his boyfriend lived. He reportedly landed in Lubbock, Texas, and purchased a Toyota Camry for $3,000 from a Sam's Club. I didn't know you could do that.
You can buy cars at Sam's Club?
I get what you can in Texas.
That's news to me.
Yeah. He then went to a local Walmart, which had to be next door, I gotta think, because Sam's Club and Walmart aren't far away from each other.
No. Why not just buy whatever you're going to buy at Walmart at Sam's Club?
Well, you'd have to buy the knives in bulk.
Oh, he bought the knife there. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
He then went to a local Walmart, purchased a knife, a hatchet, a gas can, a collapsible shovel, a headlamp, a change of clothing, boots and personal hygiene items, and a first aid kit. You would
so basically he bought a murder kit.
He bought a murder kit, and you would think the cashier would have figured it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. After purchasing the items, Duberic then drove to his 30-year-old boyfriend's home and stabbed him 93 times on the side of a rural farm road before dumping his body. According to the attorney's office, prosecutors said Duberic told his boyfriend's family that he wanted to take him out to dinner and spend the night at a local hotel.
Well, it didn't go the way he had said.
Yeah. U.S. Attorney Leah Simonton said the defendant, or this defendant, took his, or try that again. This defendant looked his boyfriend's family in the eyes and described the date night he had planned for the two of them. But instead of providing a romantic evening, he carried out a sadistic, premeditated plan to take the life of a 30-year-old man and callously dispose of his body. Following the fatal stabbing of Chad Luera, Duberic reportedly fled to Houston and sold the car he used in the stabbing to someone outside an auto auction. So this man had an amazing way of finding and getting rid of cars.
Yeah. I wonder if he made a profit. Hey, I'll sell you this car that for $5,000.
That's an amazing thing to wonder there, Bruiser.
I wonder other things too, like what preempted this, but I'm assuming it'll come on later in the story. You know, this is I don't think they're covering the story how much he resold the car for.
I don't think it's covered here. Investigators searched the vehicle and reportedly found blood in the back seat that matched Luera's. Duberic remained at large for about 5 months, but eventually turned himself into San Diego law enforcement on March 18th of 2021. According to the attorney's office, as he was being booked into jail, Duberic was questioned about a tattoo of his boyfriend's name on his ring finger, and he answered that it was the name of the person that he had killed.
Oh, geez.
Well, that pretty much is an admission right there. Yeah. During the sentencing, the victim's aunt reportedly said after viciously attacking him, the defendant left this wonderful human life who he reportedly loved and wanted to marry on the side of the road like yesterday's trash, like his life didn't matter, to bleed to death.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, 93 stab wounds. You're not going to live from that.
No. The victim's aunt continued, why would he extinguish a light that shone so brightly for so many? Why didn't he just stay in California and move on with his life? It's a very good question. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because he boarded a plane, went, bought the car, bought the murder kit. Like, he was there to murder that guy.
Yeah, without question. Without question. We move on.
I wonder if he turned himself in because of the guilt and anxiety, because it reminds me of like Edgar Allan Poe's Telltale Heart. Remember how the guy kills him and he puts him, buries him under the floorboards, but his heart keeps beating, so the anxiety and the guilt is what makes him turn himself in. I wonder if this guy went through that. That's why he turned himself in.
I don't think so. You know what I think it is I think he just planned on doing it and then immediately afterwards went, you know what? I've done what I went to do and my life is over.
Okay.
Yeah. And just turned himself in. It doesn't seem like it was so much guilt as it was the end of a mission.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think of it that way.
You know?
It was very mission oriented the way he put it all together. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it was very premeditated. If there was guilt, you know, it would have happened in the moment, but it was very premeditated.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot of planning involved. So I don't think guilt is an issue here.
No, I see it now. Yeah.
Yeah, not at all. Let's move on. A family friend convicted of intentionally setting a Florida woman on fire. That's where we're going now, to Volusia County, Florida. A man was sentenced to life in prison this week for killing a friend in 2017 whose property he lived on. On August 27th of 2017, Tracy Adams was set on fire and ran into her DeLand home where her children were and yelled the suspect, Bernard Thomas, quote unquote, tried to kill me, according to the Florida State Attorney's Office for the 7th Judicial Circuit. Investigators responded to the scene and reportedly concluded that a bottle of gasoline was thrown at Adams while she sat inside her vehicle.
Oh, that's a terrible way to go.
Yeah, it is. Adams' vehicle was engulfed in flames and the fire spread to the roof of her residence, according to the attorney's office. Thomas reportedly shot Adams in the shoulder, but she ultimately died from complications due to the burn injuries. According to the attorney's office, Thomas lived in a gazebo in Adams's property for approximately a year and was a close friend of the family. That's close friend in quotes, by the way.
Bruce. Yeah.
Yeah. Investigators identified Thomas as a suspect by using cell phone tower mapping, the attorney's office went on to say. He allegedly called Adams more than 30 times over a 7-day period, but no calls were made to the victim after the incident. On January 12th, the attorney's office announced that a jury found Thomas guilty on first-degree murder, first-degree arson of dwelling, and first-degree arson of occupied vehicle. Thomas also reportedly pleaded guilty to possession of a firearm by a felon. The attorney's office said he was sentenced to life in prison for the first-degree murder charge and 30 years for arson. State Attorney R.J. Larisa said in a statement, the brutal nature of this crime shocks me. This murder was an act of a depraved and vicious man. His cruelty knows no bounds.
That's one of my biggest fears, is being burned alive. Just a horrible way to go.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. I have a couple of quick notes as far as that goes, being burned alive.
Yeah.
My mom's brother actually burned up in an incinerator when he was a child. They were playing around an incinerator and he got locked inside of it and burned up.
That's terrifying. Just terrifying.
Yeah, that's terrifying. And then the second one being there's a famous video of a monk setting himself on fire.
Yeah. The Rage Against the Machine cover.
Yeah.
Has that. And that's not, they weren't setting themselves on fire. It was people, they were protesting and people were dumping gasoline and lighting them on fire to see if they would break their meditation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Rage Against the Machine took that and put it on their album cover. But it's just, man, that painful, scary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And these monks, like, that were being lit on fire didn't move. They were so deep in their meditation and dedicated.
Right. Right. Yeah. I can't. Yeah. I just can't. Yeah, that's a terrible, terrible way to go.
That's my number two fear of dying, is that.
Yeah.
Number one is drowning. I don't want to drown.
Yeah. This story, Bruiser, qualifies as the second largest story of the week, next to, and the one that has gone viral on the internet, next to our killer in Utah. This is the time in the program where if you're listening around small children, you want to turn your listening device down or put in headphones. And we'll give you a couple of seconds here to do so. We'll go 5, 4, 3, 2, and then we'll play this.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Yeah! That actual sound from Tennessee. Actual soundbite from Tennessee. The Laverne Police Department is where that sound clip comes from. Because there's 6 we got thems. And it was probably shouted from one female police officer. Boy, is there a mess in the Laverne Police Department, Bruiser.
There's a huge mess right now. I don't think they have any police left, do they?
No.
And not because they're all hurt in the line of duty, let's say.
Well, they might have been.
Someone took a shot, but
that's one way of putting it. There's a huge mess, but it may be in the break room. 5 officers were fired as a sex scandal roils a Tennessee police department. That's right. Yeah.
This is an exciting police department to work for.
I guess. Boy, there are memes aplenty on this deal.
There sure is.
You can't go across social media without seeing the memes. An investigation found the officers participated in Girls Gone Wild style parties, heavy drinking, and having sex while on duty. 3 others were suspended without pay. Now, to give you an idea, the Laverne Police Department in Tennessee has 60 employees. So chances are, if you work for the Laverne Police Department, 1/5 of you were having fun.
Yep. I want to say 10% of them are having a good time.
Well, more than 10%.
66. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
1/5 of you were having fun.
1/5, yeah. Yep.
Tennessee Police Department was in turmoil this past week following allegations that at least 5 of its male officers had sex with a female officer both on and off the job. Now, here's the kicker, Bruiser.
Okay.
It wasn't the males forcing themselves on the female.
No, it was the female. She was the instigator, I guess you could say.
Yeah. So far, 5 officers have been fired and 3 more have been suspended without pay as officials in the Nashville suburb of Laverne I'm speechless on this, investigate the allegations against the 60-person police department that, according to Mayor Jason Cole, the situation is unacceptable, and as soon as it was brought to our attention, it was immediately investigated and action was taken upon the individuals involved, Cole said in a statement. Our top priority moving forward will include rebuilding the public's trust.
You think? Because instead of defending the public, they're on the back boozing it up and partying and caught with their pants down, literally.
So to speak, yeah.
How do you like to be the one good cop? Like, wait a minute, we're doing what now? Huh? Where was the memo?
We did, huh? We did what with who? The accounts of Laverne police officers were in an internal report about the department's investigation obtained by NBC affiliate WSMV in Nashville. The officers spoke about sharing cell phone photos of their genitals. Well, you know, sometimes you're waiting a long time on a bust.
Yeah. Hey, I'm on the stick out. Here's what it's doing to me.
Having sex in the police station on duty and taking part in Girls Gone Wild type parties. Interesting. The actions of a few do not represent the department as a whole, Police Chief Burl Chip Davis said.
Burl, that's a great name.
Burl, yeah. Davis said that despite the firings and suspensions, we have sufficient staff to cover all of our patrol shifts, he said. Counselors have been brought in to help our officers work through these circumstances.
What are the counselors going to do? Sorry, you were left out, weren't punished.
Do you feel bad that nothing, you know, you weren't involved? I mean, that you didn't get
any? Yeah, how does it make you feel that your partner was chosen, but you weren't? Are you okay?
You feeling
your self-esteem good?
Megan Hall, the female officer at the center of the scandal, has been fired, according to city officials.
Literally the center of the scandal.
Also sacked were Sergeant Lewis Powell, Sergeant Henry Ty McGowan, Detective Seneca Shields, and Officer Juan Lugo Perez. Officers Larry Holiday, Patrick Maglioco, and Gavin, I believe it is Shaberl, have been suspended. NBC News tried to contact all the officers who were dismissed or suspended, but got no response. In addition to violating departmental rules against having sex while on duty, they are accused of impeding the investigation by lying about their actions and engaging in conduct unbecoming of an officer, that according to the investigative report. None have been charged with crimes, city spokeswoman Ann Smith said. The Rutherford County District Attorney's Office told WTVF-TV of Nashville that it was monitoring the situation. Earlier, Police Sergeant Eric Stotts, who is president of the department's Fraternal Order of Police chapter, told news media that none of the officers would be making a statement. Stotts owns the houseboat on which a wild hot tub party was held last Memorial Day, where officers were drinking heavily and where at one point Hall lost her top and had vodka poured down her throat. That according to the investigative report. Stotts is not accused of any wrongdoing. City officials had launched an investigation December 12th after a police sergeant informed Cole that Hall was having intimate relationships with fellow officers, according to a report obtained by WSMV that lays out what is alleged to have happened in graphic detail. Under questioning, Powell, Maglioco, Holiday, Shields, and Lugo Perez all admitted to having sex with Hall, that according to the report. Hall also admitted to having sex with those officers and with McGowan. The report also went on to say, she said she also shared nude images with Holiday, Maglioco, McGowan, and Shaberl. Shields told city investigators that Hall performed oral sex on him in the police gym after initially having claimed, I have never, ever had sex with Megan Hall, the report says.
It's still sex there, buddy.
when did police work get done? That's what I want to know.
That's what I want to know, too. And they said there was no crimes committed, but isn't time theft a crime?
I think you're right. Time theft is a crime. At least that's what they tell you on the job the first day. Time theft is a crime. And that's what Dwight Schrute said on The Office. Time theft is a crime. Powell also initially denied having had any sexual relationship with Hall, according to the report. He later admitted in the report that he, too, engaged in oral sex with Hall on duty in a police substation. Powell also admitted that as the investigation progressed, he and Hall compared notes in a failed bid to keep their tryst a secret from investigators. Powell confirmed that he and Hall met at Planet Fitness. Well, at least they took it off of company property.
Yeah.
Powell confirmed they discussed the investigation, and Powell told Hall he denied all the allegations during his interview with HR. Maglioco told investigators that in addition to having sex with Hall, she also proposed doing things with him and his wife.
Okay. So she's an equal opportunity,
I guess. Holiday also reported that Hall floated the idea of having a threesome with him and his ex. I guess
she's just leaving her husband out of it.
Yeah. We'll update you on the husband in a second. Holiday and Maglioco expressed concern in the interviews about Hall's heavy drinking and mental health, according to the report. Maglioco reported knowing that Hall unloaded her weapon and dry fired the gun at her head so she could hear what it sounded like.
Yeah, then they might want to report her to a superior.
Yeah. But Maglioco admitted not reporting that to anyone until December 8th when he said he called Stotts to relay these concerns to leadership. McGowan revealed in what the report described as contentious interviews with police brass that he once went to Hall's house with another female and exposed his genitals. He was also accused of trying to intimidate a city human resources assistant by grabbing her by the neck. McGowan claims that it was playful. However, it was unwanted and an aggressive form of physical contact that is not permitted at work, according to the report. Lots of things going on there in the Laverne Police Department. Now,
all missed the video, the sexual harassment video that they show you on day one, didn't they?
Yeah, there's a video. Yeah, there's a video I think they all should have watched.
I haven't had I guess you could say, real job in many years, but I remember back in the day, your first day, they play a sexual harassment video, and this is how you're supposed to act at work.
Right, and you sign a paper.
Yeah, like that, and that video is not a suggestion, correct? It's a don't right. do this.
Right, you follow the law to and fro and by the letter.
And you think the police would know the law?
Right. You should know the law. Right, you should know the law. Now, there's an update to this story having to do with the husband of the lady involved in this, and that this is a little disturbing. I'll give you that, and it has to do with the fact that the husband of the Tennessee cop at the center of the department sex scandal is sticking by his wife.
Why would you stick by her?
Well,
she pretty much had a run of that whole department.
That's a good way of putting it, Bruiser. He's standing by his wife.
She instigated it.
Yes, she was the instigator in most situations. He says, actually, let me read the quote here from Jedediah Hall's boss, Coffee County Sheriff Chad Partine. He told the Daily Mail on Friday, "I don't know how he's doing it. He's more of a man than I am, but he's trying to salvage his marriage." Jedediah Hall is the husband. Jedediah's wife, Officer Megan Hall of the Laverne, Tennessee Police Department, was fired after allegations emerged that she engaged in sex with her coworkers, sent nude photos, took off her top at a Girls Gone Wild themed hot tub party, and performed oral sex on two fellow officers while on duty. To give the man credit, he's trying to keep the marriage together.
He's taking those vows seriously.
Yeah. Now, Megan Hall had told her coworkers she was in an open marriage, according to investigators.
Okay. So maybe that is the case. Maybe he's got non-work related relations on the side.
One of her coworkers, however, said that Jedediah, who told the Daily Mail, or who the Daily Mail reported as the son of a pastor, was not on board with that.
Okay. So she was saying it so that they're like okay with doing what they're doing.
So even her coworkers knew that he was not on board with that.
Yeah, and they still went along with it.
Yeah, and they still went along with it. Partine said the former park ranger had been in training for a job with the Tennessee Highway Patrol, but pulled out, I hate to use those words, but pulled out after the allegations against his wife became public. He's since become a deputy in Coffee County.
Well, okay. He probably figures she's attracted to men in uniform, so he wants to wear a uniform.
That's a stretch, but okay. Partine went on to say, "I have offered and extended him any resource that he needs, and all he says is, 'Sheriff, I just want to work for the citizens of Coffee County, and I love what I'm doing.'" This guy sounds like a stand-up guy.
Yeah, this guy sounds like a guy I want to go have a beer with.
Yeah. He says, "I don't condone what went on at the Laverne Police Department, but he sure hasn't broken any laws. He's the victim here. There's not a blemish on his record. He's doing a phenomenal, phenomenal job," Partine went on to add. So Meg Leoco, who we had mentioned earlier in the story, one of the guys who had been with his wife, says Jedediah really wasn't on board with his wife having a threesome. He's the guy who's coming forward and saying the guy wasn't on board with his wife doing things with him and his wife.
Right.
And, you know, so obviously it got out that his wife was cheating on him and he wasn't with it. Meg Leoco also expressed concern for Megan Hall's mental health, claiming she had been prone to heavy drinking. He also said she had once again pointed an empty gun at her head and pulled the trigger so she could see what it sounded like. So there's a lot.
I wonder if he's staying with her to get her through this hard patch mentally and get her the help she needs, knowing that a divorce on top of all this might send her over the edge.
Maybe.
Which he's, again, a stand-up guy for doing that.
I think there's more than that. I think he's probably, being a pastor's son, he's a guy of good character.
And that too.
And he loves his wife. And he just knows that she's, you know, there's some serious things wrong, and she needs, you know, she needs some real help there.
Right.
Yeah. So he's probably just trying to, you know, get her the help she needs and get through this and see if he can save the marriage. And that's
which is sad, because the poor guy's being dragged through the mud online, and he shouldn't be, because he is the victim here. Like, if there's a victim in this, I can't even say crime, but he is the victim, along with the other spouses of the other officers.
Oh yeah, absolutely. He is a victim. Well, it is a, you know, he is a victim of a crime here, because technically it's a crime against the people of Laverne, Tennessee.
Yeah,
absolutely. With that, in transitions of all transitions, Bruiser, folks, when we come back, more ripped from the headlines. And boy, have we got some kind of grisly headlines to get to you. And then a little bit later in the program, dumb crimes and stupid criminals. We'll lighten it up a bit with the Cruiser and the Bruiser right here on the best in true crime podcasting. This is True Crime Tuesday. Welcome back to True Crime Tuesday. This is Ripped from the Headlines. We've got some dumb crimes and stupid criminals coming up a little bit later. I'm Tim Dennis. Right over there is Beer City Bruiser. Bruiser, a little bit more grisly headlines to head to, and then we'll tackle dumb crimes and stupid criminals here in just a bit.
Okay. So a little grisly, then a little funny.
A little grisly, then a little funny. We are going to Columbia, Missouri, my friend, where this one is just grisly, as grisly can get.
I lived about 15 minutes from there.
Did you? Where'd you live?
Yeah, I lived in Eldon, which is right around that area. I believe it's Columbia County is what Eldon's in.
Okay, yep. Some remains have been found in a burn pit outside a home as police conduct a welfare check for a missing college student. A 20-year-old woman was arrested after police found human remains inside a burn pit while conducting a welfare check. According to the Columbia Police Department, on Tuesday, January 10th at approximately 5:30 p.m., officers from the University of Missouri Police Department were dispatched to Hudson Hall on campus to check on the welfare of a missing student. During the investigation, officers went to the 2400 block of Bentley Court and located unidentifiable human remains. Police said the circumstances these remains were found in appeared to be suspicious. University of Missouri police called the Columbia Police Department to the scene to conduct a homicide investigation. Detectives identified Emma Adams as a suspect and arrested her for second-degree murder, armed criminal action, tampering with physical evidence, and abandonment of a corpse. Columbia police said they could not positively identify the victim, but they have a good idea of who the victim is. The victim was referred to as John Doe as police wait to inform his next of kin. According to the Columbia Missourian, the missing student reportedly took an Uber on Monday, January 9th, and police obtained information about where he went, which is how they arrived at the residence on Bentley Court. The probable cause statement cited by the Columbia Missourian says the victim's body was smoldering and detectives smelled burnt flesh.
Oh, that's a disgusting, disgusting smell. I don't know if you've ever smelled it before, but I have. Ugh. Not good.
As an officer arrested Adams and asked her who was in the pit, she allegedly said something to the effect of, "He was beating me."
Oh, geez.
Yeah. She allegedly said she stabbed the man in self-defense. Detectives reportedly found bloodstains coming out of the home and ending at a parked car, as well as a bloody knife and a smashed cell phone in the sink. Court records show Adams was scheduled to appear in court on Thursday, January 12th for her arraignment, but did not show up because she refused to come out of her cell. A second arraignment is scheduled for Friday, January 13th. No word on whether that actually happened or not. Adams is being held in the Boone County Jail with bond set at $1 million cash.
You can stay in your cell all you want. They're not going to forget about this. You're getting arraigned.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you are getting arraigned. You're right.
You're just prolonging the inevitable.
You're right. A decomposing body was found in clothing in a clothing donation bin identified as a missing South Carolina mom. Oh, this is sad.
Yeah.
We go to Kershaw County, South Carolina, where officials have positively identified the woman whose decomposing body was discovered in a clothing donation bin on New Year's Eve. On December 31st, deputies from the Kershaw County Sheriff's Office were called to a metal bin at 850 Highway 1 between Lugoff Toyota and Camden West Inn after a citizen reported noticing a foul smell. Well, that's the worst as well.
Yeah.
Kershaw County Sheriff Lee Bowen told WACH-TV that the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division was processing the scene as they would a homicide investigation. Bowen said, unfortunately, it appears the body has possibly been there for months. It was badly decomposed and mostly skeletal.
Oh.
Yeah, that's
so horrible. Whoever dumped her knew that it wouldn't be found for a while if she was dumped there.
Right. Investigators initially said they believed the remains were those of a woman, but they could not get any more specific than that. The coroner conducted an autopsy last week, and WIS-TV reported that the remains were positively identified as 47-year-old Leslie Lemoyne. A tattoo on her calf reportedly helped the identification process. According to WIS, Lemoyne's daughter, Hannah Gates, said she had not seen Lemoyne since March. Kershaw County Coroner David West told WIS Lemoyne's body will undergo toxicology tests, and some of her bones will be sent to an anthropologist to see if she suffered any trauma. Kershaw County Sheriff Lee Bowen added, we're assuming that the location we found her in was just where her body was dumped at. It's a dump location, not necessarily the location where she passed away at. Gates is reportedly now trying to obtain full custody of Lemoyne's 10-year-old daughter. Lemoyne's family described her as a funny, charismatic, free spirit that loved Jesus and having a good time in her obituary. She reportedly dealt with addiction for 30 years. She leaves behind her mother, stepfather, brother, daughters, and other family members.
It's sad, but there's two ways this could go. If it was a homicide, she was dumped there, but it could also be if she was an addict, she could have climbed in there herself and then something OD or something in past.
She could have relapsed. She could have been cold and climbed in there to get warm.
Right.
Yeah.
There's numerous things it can have. It's a sad story overall.
Right. Right. Exactly. She could have climbed in there to get warm and smothered to death. She could have climbed in there to get warm and froze to death. She could have, I mean, there's many ways she could have died, or she could have been killed and dumped in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's many, many things that could have happened.
Well, prayers go out to the family, though. That's at least they have closure, because she went missing in what, March? That's almost a year of being gone.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Finally, and ripped from the headlines today, a Pennsylvania woman is sentenced for bathing her kids in bleach and giving them meth. We normally don't like to do kids stories on this, but it's an important story, so we figured we'd pass it along. We go to Bellefonte, Pennsylvania, where a 33-year-old woman was sentenced to a little less than 2 years behind bars. This is the tragedy of this. 2 years.
2 years for doing that to the children?
Yes, for bathing two of her children in bleach and giving one of them meth. The Center Daily Times reports a judge handed Tara Allman a sentence of 11.5 to 23.5 months in the Center County Correctional Facility with 5 months of time served. So she's already served 5 months of this.
What does she have on that judge for him to be so lenient?
Right. After she pleaded no contest to two counts of child endangerment, the judge also sentenced Almond to 5 years of probation. So she only gets 5 months of probation on top of that really, really lean sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah. According to WGAC-TV, in April, Bellefonte police received a report from Children and Youth Services alleging Almond smoked meth and gave some to her children. Almond's oldest child reportedly told police they were failing school because they had to take care of their younger siblings due to the fact that Almond was always sleeping. The oldest child also told police Amon sprayed some of the children with bleach because she believed there were bugs coming out of them.
Well, that's the meth.
Yeah. The probable cause affidavit cited by the Center Daily Times alleged one child informed police their bathroom smelled like a pool. Another child reportedly became addicted to meth.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
See, that's wrong. These are innocent children.
Right.
You know, I understand that meth is an addiction and the mother had an addiction, but somebody on the outside had to have seen that she had an addiction. Take those kids away.
Right. During her sentencing, Amon's children and two adults sat in the courtroom and provided written statements. One child said they have a lifetime of trust issues. I don't doubt that at all. But another said they are doing much better and got a chance at life that all kids deserve. Again, that sentence needs to be much heavier.
Yeah, she needs to be punished.
Yeah, and 11 and a half to 23 and a half months in a correctional facility with 5 months of time served and then 5 years of probation is just way too lenient.
And hopefully they will never let her have another child and she will never see her children again.
You would hope.
You got to protect those kids.
You would hope. With that, we end on that heavy note so that we can take time right now to lighten it up. It's time now for Dumb Crimes and Stupid Criminals.
It's Crayon News story time.
What happened with this dude, Christ Bearer? I heard he cut his penis off and then jumped off a balcony.
Suspect pulls gun from butt, shoots twice at Denver police.
What is your emergency?
Hello.
And what's the problem?
I'm too high.
You're too high?
Yeah.
It's time now for Dumb Crimes and Stupid Criminals. I don't need to reintroduce them. We did it at the top of the show, but we do it along with the one and only, the cute and cuddly and quite dangerous when you get them within four ropes. The BCB, the Big Cuddly Bear, Beer City Bruiser.
Hi, everybody.
Bruiser, we start off today's Dumb Crimes, Stupid Criminals with a really dumb obituary.
Oh, okay. So the person's already dead.
Person's already dead from his crime. His crime was grisly and gruesome at that. But who he's being compared to is just stupid.
Okay.
Are you ready for this one?
I'm ready.
A bizarre obituary praises a Utah dad, Michael Height, who killed his wife and 5 kids. To a person he's definitely not like. Jesus.
Who would they compare him to?
Jesus Christ himself.
Jesus didn't murder anybody.
Definitely not his wife and kids.
Yeah.
A glowing obituary for a Utah man who's suspected of killing his entire family in a murder-suicide plot said he made it to a point to spend quality time with each and every one of his children as an online fundraiser bizarrely replaces him with an image of Jesus in a family photo.
So they consider murder-suicide as quality time with your kids. Okay, I missed that memo in parenting class.
Or in Bible study.
Yeah, I don't think my children want to spend time with me if I'm like, hey, guess what we're doing today?
Right? Police believe that 42-year-old Michael Height gunned down his wife, 40-year-old Tasha Height, and their 3 daughters, ages 17, 12, and 7, and 2 sons, ages 7 and 4 on January 4th, 2 weeks after she had filed for divorce.
Also, it's not the kid's fault. If she's getting divorced and you're angry at her, don't take it on the kids. You shouldn't murder anybody, but, you know.
Well, thou shalt not kill, I believe, is a huge thing in the Bible. I mean,
big, big, big thing.
Yeah, I believe it's also a huge commandment. I don't know. But, yeah, that shouldn't probably mix with, like, I don't know, a picture of Jesus.
And if they're comparing him to Jesus, isn't committing suicide like a huge no-no according to the Bible?
Well, in the Catholic Church.
Okay, it's just Catholic. Okay,
right,
okay.
Right. Also killed in the Enoch City massacre was his mother-in-law, 78-year-old Gail Earle. And depending on whose opinion it is, yeah, that might not mix in so well, or it may. I don't know.
I'd be upset if my mother-in-law died.
Some people love their mother-in-laws, other people, not so much.
I love my mother-in-law. She's fantastic.
There you go.
And I mean that seriously. I'm not joking.
Like, right.
That's serious.
Yep. But an obit published in the Spectrum did not mention the killings and painted an angelic picture of the shooter, saying he excelled at everything he did after graduating from high school in 1998 as a sterling scholar in business. He achieved the rank of Eagle Scout, the tone-deaf piece went on to say. What that has to do with the price of tea in China, we don't know. Michael spent the summer after graduation working in Alaska in a fish processing plant. His leadership skills, values of honest hard work, and determination quickly led him to be a line manager and over a crew of 10 to 12 men, the obituary went on to say. Michael was called and served a full-time mission to Porto Alegre South, Brazil, for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the obit continued.
So he's Mormon. Gotcha.
Height was said to have had met his future wife during their time at Southern Utah University, where he was named the outstanding finance student. They were married in the St. George Temple on May 10th of 2003. Together, they welcomed five children into their family, Macy Lynn, Briley Ann, Ammon Michael, Sienna Bell, and Gavin Drew, the obit went on to say. It also continues, each of these children were truly a cherished miracle to them. It added, Michael made it a point to spend quality time with each and every one of his children. Michael enjoyed making memories with the family. It also said the dad lived a life of service. Whether it was serving in the church or in the community, he was willing to help with whatever was needed, the obit read. Meanwhile, a GoFundMe account was set up by the family, bizarrely replacing Height with Jesus in a family photo.
Jeez.
The fundraiser, which doesn't mention Height, had raised almost $95,000. It had raised almost $95,000 by Monday morning.
Now, is that for the family or for him?
The fundraiser was for the family, but the fundraiser didn't mention Height.
It probably should have mentioned, you know, this is for the family that was gunned down by the father.
Right, right.
The only thing that obituary was missing was that he was an avid lover of guns or something like that, for that little tongue in cheek. You know what I mean?
Right. Now, here's another kicker. In the obituary, this is the page, the GoFundMe page. It reads, their lives were tragically taken so soon or too soon. All who knew them loved them so very much, the page reads, adding that the donations will go towards funeral expenses and a memorial fund in honor of the five kids. So it seems on the up and up. Shannon Watts, an activist against gun violence and founder of Moms Demand Action, condemned the fawning obit and shared a link to it on Twitter, while pointing out that none of the obituary comments mention the victims, and they don't. The activists also shared a link to the family statement, which supported owning firearms. And if that's not gross enough, the wife's family put out a statement supporting guns. This is the type of loss that we will continue to occur in families, communities, and this nation when protective arms are no longer accessible, Watts said. Now, I will put out, this isn't the opinion of True Crime Tuesday.
Right.
Okay, we don't side on either side of this debate.
Right.
That's the wording of the article. The eyebrow-raising obit published by the mortuary was later made private. Enoch Mayor Jeffrey Chestnut said police were still investigating the motive of for the murder-suicide, but that they were aware that court records showed Tasha filed for divorce on December 21st. Tasha's sister-in-law, Jenny Earle, told the Associated Press that Michael had removed all guns from the home before the shootings. She said the lack of access to firearms left Tasha Height, her mother, and her children more vulnerable. Police said they had investigated Michael before, suggesting previous problems inside the household. A sad story indeed, but man, to go to that extreme.
I want to know who wrote the obituary. Had to be a complete idiot.
Well, it had to be someone within the church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I get turned the other cheek, but in this instance, like, you don't see Ted Bundy or Jeffrey Dahmer or John Wayne Gacy getting a bit that says how great they are. You know what I mean?
Right.
This guy murdered his whole family.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is the man is a murderer. I mean, no matter how he did it, he's a murderer. So it just to compare him to Jesus is Sickening.
Jesus didn't murder anybody. Jesus helped people. Jesus healed people.
Right, right. Meanwhile, on the other side of the religious spectrum, a man accused of targeting New Jersey Catholic churches is caught in a vandalism spree. And it's quite interesting. Just the quotes at the end of this story, it's not that he got caught in a vandalism spree.
Yeah.
It's the quote at the end of it that'll make you laugh.
Okay.
This is what I found funny. Okay. Police say the suspect carried out the spree at three churches in Gloucester and Camden counties in New Jersey. We go to Woodbury, New Jersey, where a suspected vandal targeted three Catholic churches in South Jersey in just a matter of minutes on Friday morning. Authorities say 40-year-old Peter Ciroli broke a window and set fires in two of the attacks. He was arrested on multiple counts, including arson, criminal mischief, bias intimidation, desecration of sacred objects, and weapons charges. The quote here from Gloucester Township Police Chief David Harkins is, "We are still actively investigating his social media pages and anything else. We have no ties to any organization that's anti-Catholic at this time. We are not sure what his motivation is." Investigators say that it began at 7:11 a.m. Authorities accused Ciroli of setting a 10-foot cross on fire on the lawn of St. Patrick's Church in Woodbury. About 15 minutes later, he then allegedly made his way to St. Teresa's Church in Runnymede, New Jersey, I believe that's how it's pronounced, when he attempted to throw a rock through a window. A witness followed the suspect and provided information to police as Ciroli traveled in a white pickup truck to St. Agnes Church in Gloucester Township. The suspect was then seen throwing a brick through the main door window before driving across the parking lot and setting fire to a flagpole with an American flag. Now that you just don't do.
No.
You don't do any of this, but the flag especially.
Yeah.
Norberto Cruz was working maintenance at St. Agnes and says he yelled at the suspect to stop and put out the fire. He just kept doing what he was doing. He had a gallon of gasoline. I was able to get part of his tag numbers and call 911, said Cruz. Police would arrest Ciroli after a, get this, slow speed chase in the parking lot of a Seventh-day Adventist church on Good Intent Road in Deptford, New Jersey.
I love slow speed chases.
Right, a slow speed chase.
I love watching him on the body cam or the dash cams, especially when the guy's putting his blinker on to let him know he's turning.
Right, right. I just, slow speed chases kill me. They're the funniest thing ever. Yeah. So authorities say gas cans and bricks were found in the bed of his truck. Now, Father Joseph Zolak of St. Agnes Church, God bless him, says, "We forgive him. We are grateful no one was hurt. We can replace glass."
Yeah, that's true.
That's a great attitude. You know, yeah. I mean, even though this guy was trespassing on your church and he's just an all-around dick.
Yeah.
You know, God bless you, Father.
Yep.
He's got the right attitude. Despite vandalism, Mass went on as planned Friday morning at St. Agnes Church. Parishioners throughout South Jersey are still concerned, however. Here's the quote that
all right.
Absolutely kills me. Father says, "No big deal. It's glass. We can replace it. You know, we forgive the guy. It's all good. He turns the other cheek."
Right.
He preaches the walk. He walks the preach, right?
He's being very holy and very biblical.
Following Jesus's teachings.
Yes.
Right.
Not the Jesus that murders his whole family.
Right. Here comes a parishioner, Kathy Cacciola, attends St. Patrick's Church.
Okay. What does Kathy have to say?
She says this. "All the gospel, I should do the accent, but I'm not going to. All the gospel readings this week were about Jesus driving out demons, and then someone comes along and lights a cross on fire. I just couldn't believe it. Like, isn't there something else you can set on fire? Like an old trash can or something?"
How about we don't light anything on fire? We just leave everything alone.
Right, right. The Diocese of Camden provided this statement to Action News. Action News! At a time when houses of worship often seem to be the target of individual angst, it is reassuring to know our local police departments take incidents like this so seriously and act quickly. While we do not yet know the motivation of the person currently in custody, I ask the Catholic faithful of South Jersey to offer prayer that he might find peace. Now, that's nice. That's nice. But old Kathy Caccioli...
Kathy's like, go light a dumpster, not our church.
Cacciola, I'm sorry, Cacciola says, couldn't you light a garbage can of fire or something? Leave Christ alone for crying out loud.
We just learned about demons. Come on. I don't know why I'm Southern.
I don't know. Come on. Yeah, it was South Jersey. That's why.
Yeah, she's Jersey. It was South Jersey.
It was South Jersey. That's why. In other news, dumb crimes, stupid criminals. By the way, enough with the emotional support animals on flights that aren't dogs or cats. All right.
You don't like the emotional support monkeys?
Oh, no, we can use the monkey, too.
Okay.
But other than that.
You don't like the rabbit? Emotional support rabbit?
No. Other than that, that's the cutoff.
Okay. No emotional support donkey.
No. Takes up too much room in the aisle.
I looked into it and like. I'd love to travel with Ziggy, but you still have to pay for a ticket because they're so big.
Right.
She's too big. Yeah.
Ziggy will work. Well, can't you put Ziggy under the seat?
No, she won't fit there.
Really? I read a story about it was a bigger dog. I think it was a German Shepherd that fits right under the seat, just tucks itself right under the seat and just
sits. Yeah, she wouldn't fit under there.
No?
Okay. And I couldn't get her to stay there.
Well, I guess. but enough of the exotic animals, you know,
like the iguanas,
the iguanas, the lizards,
bearded dragons.
Yeah, enough of that.
The boa constrictors.
That right there is the next story.
Oh, we got snakes on a plane, huh?
Snakes on a plane. Wait a minute. Hey, Samuel, are you tired of those snakes on the plane?
Sorry, I'm not sure about that.
Oh, okay, he's not sure about that. I am sure about that.
I am sure of that, too.
Yeah. TSA busted a Florida woman this week for trying to bring a boa constrictor on a flight. By the way, it is illegal.
I figured.
Yeah, you can't do that. Because the boa constrictor can give you a hug when you're not feeling safe, Bruce.
Or it could hug you because it's hungry and wants to eat you.
Well, there's that, too. A Florida woman who tried bringing a huge snake through airport security said it was her emotional support animal. According to,
it didn't have a vest on it?
It didn't. No, it's funny. You can't get that vest around the boa.
No, you can't. You can't get it to stay in one spot.
No, it just doesn't. According to the TSA. The hair-raising moment happened last month at Tampa International Airport. Of course it did. During a security screening, TSA spokesperson Leah Farbstein confirmed on Twitter an x-ray photo. Oh, good God.
She put it through the x-ray machine? She did. Come on.
Yeah. Shows the 4-foot-long boa constrictor named Bartholomew curl up inside his owner's carry-on bag, among other belongings.
Okay, I got my khakis, I got my polos, got my workout clothes, Bartholomew set. Okay, let's go.
Snake on a plane, she tweeted. Woman claimed the snake was her emotional support pet. TSA notified.
Helps with her anxiety.
No. Take a gummy. TSA notified the airline, which ruled that there was not going to be a snake on their plane. Or as they put it, I'm not going to have no mother effing snake on this mother effing plane.
Mm-hmm. TSA went out of the way to hire Samuel Jackson for 5 minutes walk up to this woman and say that.
And they said, Samuel, tell me there's not going to be a mother effing snake on this mother effing plane. And he's not listening. He turned me off just now. Take a look. That's what it looks like, Bruiser.
Oh, yeah, that's a snake.
When you put a boa constrictor in your carry-on.
That had to be terrible because you know, if the person doing the x-ray doesn't know it's a snake, but it looks like something that isn't supposed to be in there.
Oh, that
somebody else has to open that up.
Yep. They know that's a snake. I'll tell you that much.
Okay. So here it is, Tim, you and I work in TSA.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the x-ray machine.
Yep.
You see that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the guy that has to search the bag. Do you tell me you saw a snake or you just tell me I need to search the bag?
Oh, F yeah. I tell you that's a snake.
Like, you don't want me to open it and find out myself and freak out?
Bruiser, snake on lane one. Do your best Jake Roberts impression.
Because, I mean, that'd be pretty funny. You're like, hey, I need this bag checked. Oh, what am I looking for? You'll know.
Snake. Big snake. Huge snake. About a four-footer. At that point, I see if any of the animal guys from like the Tonight Show are around, because I'm not taking that deal on.
No.
I
mean, I wouldn't mind. I can handle a boa constrictor. They're fine. It's just, I need to know it's there before I do anything.
But how do you know it's a boa constrictor? I mean, you don't.
That's the whole thing. Like I'm saying, like, you don't know what it is.
Yeah. I mean, an Instagram post from TSA said airlines don't allow these slithering reptiles to travel in carry-on bags. Officials did note, however, that only a few allow them to slither around in checked bags if packaged correctly.
Even, how do you package a snake correctly?
I take it it's not peanuts and other things. yeah, probably cages. Even then, most U.S. airlines have banned emotional support animals and only allow certain qualified service animals depending on the policy. A similar story happened in November when a full-grown cat was discovered inside someone's checked bag heading to the Sunshine State. There was an actual snakes on a plane moment back in October where a snake somehow slithered into the cabin of a flight leaving Florida. Needless to say, some passengers were screaming at that point. So
that would freak me out if I'm just sitting there and I feel something slide by my feet.
Yeah. Yep. Let's move on, shall we? Bruiser, I got to ask you this. If you and Mrs. Bruiser were tooling around North Carolina there and suddenly you were attacked by a carjacker, what's the first weapon at your disposal in your car?
That I can grab?
Yeah.
I still have an ice brush. An ice scraper ice brush?
Yeah, good one.
I have one of the extendable kinds.
Yep.
I still have it. We don't need it down here, but I still have it.
Okay.
So I can just reach back and grab that.
Good weapon.
I think Mrs. Bruiser in her car has a bat.
Yeah, I have a bat. I have a bat in mine.
Yeah, she has our daughter's old softball bat. And I think that's just because in the move, we just never moved it.
Yep. I have a bat and I have a golf club. I have a driver. I go Jack Nicholson on the bit. A little Jack Nicholson action.
I got these guns right here.
Yeah, you do. You got everything you need right there.
Right there. These two 23-inch pythons.
Yep.
I don't even know how big my arms are.
I also have my grandfather, God rest his soul. He was a Maple Grove reserve officer.
Okay.
So I do have his taser.
Okay.
So I've got a police grade taser in my van as well.
Mrs. Bruce has got a pair of pink brass knuckles.
Oh, there you go. That's good to have.
Plus I have her. I don't know anybody wants to cross her.
Yeah, no, nobody wants to take on Mrs. Bruiser, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, one New Orleans man had an original weapon.
Okay.
A tasty weapon at that.
Really?
Yeah. One I would carjack him just for the weapon.
Like a pie?
Well, that's a good one.
Or some birthday cake. You and I always talk about birthday cake. Oh,
birthday cake.
I get one now once a month.
I would think about carjacking Corey over Jelly Bean and Julia just for some ribs or some brisket.
This weekend we went to Hillbilly's and I had some brisket.
Did ya?
Melt in your mouth brisket.
I actually stopped at Jelly Bean and Julia's twice this weekend in the same day. Yeah. Well, I had to have my playoff food, you know, and they're not open for lunch on Sundays.
Right.
So I went in Saturday after my shift at KNSI and I got my playoff food.
Yep.
And then a buddy came over on Saturday night. We went over there for dinner.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So
yeah, we went for a late dinner, early dinner, late lunch. And I almost got the all you can eat brisket, but I knew I'd kill myself because the brisket's so good.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. $22 all you can eat brisket.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm coming to your neck of the woods.
Oh.
$22 for all you can eat brisket.
Yeah. I ordered extra sauce on the side. Oh.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, New Orleans. We're in New Orleans. What a superhero. This incredible moment where a New Orleans man fought off a carjacker with a pot of gumbo.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would do that.
Yeah, before wrestling that suspect through his sunroof. This just so happened to happen over Christmas Day, I believe. This is the incredible moment where a New Orleans man fought off a carjacker using a pot of gumbo he was delivering to a neighbor. I just feel bad for the neighbor. Footage shows that the suited man spotted the theft and or suited man rather spotted the theft and raced onto the street before flinging his meal at the vehicle. He then leapt on the bonnet. This is a British article, by the way. The bonnet of the car or the hood of the car screeches forward while plummeting it with his fists. He then leapt on the bonnet as the car screeches forward while plummeting it with his fists. I had to make sure I had that right.
So he jumped on the hood of the car and started punching.
Yep. Oh, okay. I see. I'm looking at the video here. Carjacker gets inside the car. The guy in the suit has the pot of gumbo and throws it at the hood of the car and then jumps onto the hood and then tries to get onto the windshield and get in through the sunroof to get his car back. It's pretty interesting. As the red car continues to inch forward, he manages to reach in through the sunroof and wrestles with the driver before hopping off of the car itself. The clip begins as the well-dressed man, who has not been named, exited his red SUV while the motor was still running. He walks up to his neighbor's house holding the gumbo and a drink as another car pulls up outside. Two men are seen in the other silver SUV as one hops out of the back seat and gets into the driver's seat of the victim's SUV. He then attempts to drive off, but is spotted by the man who races across the sidewalk and jumps on the hood. The carjacker hits the gas, trying to mow the victim down twice before he tosses the pot of gumbo at the car thief. The man is seen climbing on the hood and wrestling the assailant through the sunroof as the car is moving. The victim then grabs the suspect's jacket before the carjacker jumps out of the red SUV and hops into the getaway before both assailants flee. The victim did not suffer any serious injuries and filed a police report online.
He went online? Come on.
Good Lord. Good police work out there in New Orleans.
Yeah.
I was nearly run over twice and reacted on instinct to protect myself and my property. What would you do in this situation? He told the news outlet. In hindsight, there were better decisions I could have made, but I am fed up with crime in our city. Amen. We expect our police and municipal leaders to do what is necessary to protect our citizens, he went on to say. Mike Kahn, a former New Orleans Police Department commander and security expert, said people may be frustrated with crime in the city, but warned about the dangers of putting matters into your own hands. Your adrenaline is going, but you have to think again. Most of these people doing these carjackings are armed, he said. He said, in a situation like this, get as much info as you can and get a good description of these perps and let them go. Again, it's property. It can be replaced. We have to get in the habit of, when we get out of a vehicle, take the key with you, Kahn said. Car theft is a crime that has been an ongoing issue in the city of New Orleans. In 2022, a total of 4,011 cars were stolen in the city.
Jeez.
Yeah. An increase of over 35% from last year, when 2,960 cars were stolen, that according to the New Orleans City Council Crime Dashboard. And when they say crime dashboard, they got that dashboard from a car that they carjacked. In the year.
And we have a new New Orleans vigilante, Captain Gumbo.
That's right. That's right. In a totally misguided crime story, one man who will never be carjacked, a Texas man, allegedly pointed his gun at migrants and said he was doing it for America.
Get out my country. It's for America.
He's a little misguided.
God, guns, and good old gumbo. We're in Texas now.
Yeah, we're in Texas. Yeah. Evidently, this man doesn't know that these migrants will probably be doing the jobs that he wouldn't ever do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Texas man is behind bars after he allegedly held multiple migrants at gunpoint on New Year's Eve, said he was doing it for America. Oh, dear God.
In my America, let me see a green card, I'll let you go.
Here's the kicker at the end of the story, Bruce. Are you ready for this?
Yep.
27-year-old Stephen Matthew Driscoll was taken into custody last Wednesday and charged with one count of each of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, disorderly conduct, displaying a firearm, and evading arrest in a motor vehicle. Federal complaint filed in U.S. District Court for Western District of Texas also charged Driscoll with one count of being a felon in possession of a firearm. That's right. He was a stupid criminal doing it for America. In 2018, Driscoll was convicted of one count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He's done this before, kids.
Yeah.
And sentenced to 3 years in a state prison. According to the press release from the El Paso Police Department, officers at approximately 10:34 p.m. on December 31st responded to a 911 call regarding an adult male allegedly harassing migrants while on the line with the emergency dispatcher. The caller then stated that the man had a gun. Upon arriving at the scene, first responders searched the area but were unable to locate the suspect. A few hours later, at approximately 12:37 a.m. on January 1st, the same person called 911 a second time because this guy just couldn't get enough to report that they'd spotted the suspect driving a Chevy Silverado pickup truck near the Greyhound bus station at Santa Fe Street. Jesus, couldn't he just go home and sleep it off?
No, he already he sent some of them back out of America. He's going back. He's protecting America.
Well, he also allegedly pointed a handgun at several migrants. According to a copy of the federal complaint, Driscoll brandished the weapon at a warming station in downtown El Paso. Jesus. And was overheard saying that he was doing it for America before fleeing the scene in his vehicle, the chicken shit. Officers responded to the area and conducted a traffic stop on the vehicle identified by the 911 caller. The officers stopped the suspect's truck and asked the driver to exit the vehicle. The suspect initially exited the truck, but then jumped back into the vehicle and fled because he is that typical chicken shit.
I'm doing this for America. For America.
For America. Dig, 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 dig. Because of a mechanical issue, the police unit became disabled and lost sight of the suspect because they got plenty in the police budget. The following day, investigators were able to locate that Chevy Silverado and allegedly identified one of Driscoll's relatives. That'd be his uncle, who was the registered owner of the vehicle. He didn't even own his own Chevy Silverado.
Hey, Unc, I need the Chevy. What do you need the Chevy for, boy? For America.
For America, Uncle. For America.
You take that Chevy, you make America proud, okay?
You make us proud, boy. You make us proud. they went to the residence to go get him, by the way. Driscoll exited the residence and stated that he knew why the EPPD was there, and that his uncle gave him that truck for work. He's off to work. He's a hard-working American. And dig, 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 dig.
I know why you boys are here. I ain't going to fight you. No, did it for America.
I'm going in peacefully. I did it for America.
I got away once.
It turns out he wasn't so peaceful. He had a rifle. There was a rifle in the above-mentioned vehicle parked in the front of the residence in the street. He was lazy. He didn't even take the rifle in from the truck. So they said, we gotcha. Here's the firearm. Here's the truck. You're coming with us, buddy. And he went in. And that was about it. The EPPD did not immediately respond to a request for comment about the entire case. They just said,
the uncle's like, boy, where's that rifle? Well, uncle, I did it for America. I left it in the truck. So tomorrow, I'm a dude for America.
That's right. When Stephen Matthew Driscoll said, I did it for America, the El Paso Police Department said,
ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
So that's how that went.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a few stories left here in Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals. A Yakima man shot up a Taco Bell for being closed.
Well, at least nobody was hurt.
I don't know about that. Evidently, the guy on the toilet who was trying to get rid of Taco Bell might have been.
I know I got to close up this Taco Bell, but I got shit right now.
I'm going to close up the bathroom. A Yakima man is under arrest for a drive-by shooting and threatening employees after police said he became enraged with a local Taco Bell for being closed and that the fact that they wouldn't serve him.
He really wanted a Mexican pizza. Wait, is this a Ken Patera situation?
This is a Ken Patera situation, yeah. Instead of a boulder, it was a gun.
It was a gun.
Yeah. The Taco Bell employees say they were closing the restaurant at First Street there in Yakima when a man in a flatbed Ford take a look at him and then took a shot, drove up. It's a flatbed Ford, my Lord. He drove up to the window to order last Friday at approximately 2 a.m. After telling the man they were closed, the employee says the driver became immensely upset, screaming that he would break their windows if they didn't serve him food. He then said he was an Olympian and was just done with a wrestling deal. They say he then began pounding on the front doors of the restaurant, saying he was going to break in. This is a Patera.
This is 100% Patera.
A few minutes after he left, the employees say they saw the pickup parked nearby. As one of the employees began to drive away, they said they heard a single gunshot. The employees called 911 saying that the man was shooting at them. Police say they were quickly able to locate the pickup and detain the driver, 30-year-old David W. Sharp.
He just wanted a Mexican pizza, damn it.
They brought
it back.
Inside the truck, police say they found a Sig Sauer 9mm with a loaded magazine and bullet chambered in the center console, a loaded .22 pistol in a pocket just behind the driver's seat, and a Glock 9mm with an empty magazine in the rear passenger seat. He was loaded for bear.
I was going to say, where is he going with all these weapons?
Well, it's not like he's got, you know, an AR or anything like that.
They're normal weapons, but still, like, I'm going to go to the range, but first got to get my Mexican pizza.
Listen here, RoboCop. They're closed. Police say they found two spent 9mm casings on the front windshield, so he missed. And multiple shell casings or live bullet rounds in the center console. Officers investigated the Taco Bell store, and they say they found a bullet hole in the building as well as a second grazing round on an exterior wall. They also found a spent 9mm shell casing on the ground near where the pickup was parked. Sharp is facing charges of a drive-by shooting, DUI, harassment, malicious mischief, and violation of a concealed pistol license.
Of course there was a DUI.
Of course there was. You don't go to and shoot up a Taco Bell for being closed.
Yeah, he did.
You just drive by and say, I wanted my fries. My nacho fries.
Or my nacho fries and Mexican pizza. Come on.
Come on, man. Aren't you guys open like 24 hours?
No, I'm just going to blocka, shoot up your Taco Bell.
Blocka. Booyaka. This one is unusual in that, you know, you hear sometimes about somebody carjacking somebody and getting kids in the process, like kids in the back seat.
Yeah.
Okay, this woman didn't get arrested for carjacking. She got arrested for spitting on a deputy.
What?
Yeah, she got the wrong charge.
Deputy's like, I don't care about the car, the kids. You spit on me. There's right. COVID out there.
Right. The deputy was so pissed off, he got her for spitting on her. Spitting on him. A woman.
Never mind the car and the kids.
Right. A woman is accused of kidnapping infant twins in a stolen car and pleads guilty to spitting on the deputy during her arrest.
Well, that's because she did spit on the deputy. You can't prove she stole the car with the kids in it.
No, they just got her with the car. But, you know, you can't prove I took it.
Can't prove it. You can prove the spitting because they can take DNA tests. But you can't prove she stole that car
but
with the kids.
She sounded confused when she pled guilty. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
24-year-old woman who was accused of kidnapping 5-month-old twin boys who were in a car she allegedly drove off in. Has pleaded guilty to spitting on a sheriff's deputy during her arrest in that case. Nala Jackson faced a charge of battery by bodily waste, where the victim is a public safety officer, records show. She's accused of spitting on a deputy while being booked at the Marion County Jail in Indiana in December. Records show she received a 1-year jail sentence for it.
That's it?
Yep. Jackson announced in her first court appearance that she'd plead guilty. Asked her name, she reportedly responded with a question. Are you talking to me as a person or a slave?
As a convict? As a criminal?
The judge replied, I'm speaking to you as a person. Jackson reportedly gave her name as Joseph Hunt, or Jophus Hunt. Not Joseph, Jophus Hunt.
Oh, what is going on here?
I don't know. The judge asked if she understood her rights. No, yes, no. I'm pleading guilty, Jackson reportedly said. Just go ahead and sentence me.
How confused is this woman?
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's confusing.
Does she know where she is? Like, where am I?
I don't know. The judge.
I'd like a 20 piece and some fries. No, ma'am, you're in the court of law. Oh. I'd like a Mexican pizza, some nacho fries.
And I'm going to shoot up your Taco Bell if it's closed. The judge reportedly ended the hearing because Jackson kept cursing. Okay. She faces charges after authorities said she stole an idling car with two infant boys inside. The children's mother had run out while picking up a DoorDash order from a pizza place in Columbus, Ohio. Jackson allegedly stepped out of the restaurant and drove off with the mother's vehicle, which is a Honda Accord. The boys were not harmed. One was found on December 20th outside of the Dayton International Airport. The second baby was found safe in his mother's car near a Papa John's pizza parlor when Jackson was arrested. The five-month-old boy is in good condition and being transported to a hospital to be checked out, was the report at the time. The boy's grandmother, LaFonda Thomas, was relieved. This is going to be the best Christmas ever, she said. I'm so excited. It's a miracle. I'm overwhelmed right now. No hearing has been set in the kidnapping case, according to a Franklin County court staffer in Ohio. Online records show Jackson remains at the Marion County Jail in Indiana. Just the weirdest thing.
Was she confused? She had two kids. So she's like, well, this one I can take care of one, but this one's got to fly out of here. I'll just put it at the airport. Somebody will get him a ticket.
It's the weirdest case ever.
It is.
Yeah. Again, stupid criminals.
Yeah.
Two more stories here. Two quick ones before we leave you today. The weirdest reason for being arrested for almost bringing down a jet in Nova Scotia, Canada.
Okay.
A toppled holiday theme projector over Christmas.
Oh, yeah, you don't want that.
The laser projectors on your house?
Yep.
Okay.
Shot up in the air.
Police
blinded the pilot.
Yep. Police say a holiday theme projector was the source of a laser light that lit up the cockpit of a passenger jet as it was landing at Halifax Stanfield International Airport. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police say concerned citizens living near the airport came forward Tuesday to confirm that a laser projector on their property had recently fallen over and was pointing at the sky.
I don't think it was concerned citizens. I think it was an angry wife going, look, my husband overdid it again.
Mm-hmm. The Mounties say they believe there was no intention to aim the device at the approaching aircraft, which landed around 7 a.m. on January 2nd. At the time, the pilots reported the incident to air traffic control, saying a green laser beam had entered the flight deck as they were preparing to touch down. The pilots told the police that the light came from an area near the golf course on Old Guysborough Road. The RCMP later said the pranksters who pointed laser pins at aircraft can temporarily blind the crew and endanger everyone aboard. Those caught doing so face criminal charges under the Aeronautics Act, which come with a maximum fine of $100,000.
That's in Canada. In America, it's a terrorist attack. It's a terrorist threat.
Yep, it's a terrorist threat. Yep, in America. But in Canada, $100,000 fine. I'll get that out eventually.
That's because they're polite in Canada. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was a mistake. We get it.
Right. And finally, on today's program, I don't believe homeless people are criminals, but
not all of them.
The solution to the ne'er-do-wells, the shoplifters, and the homeless people in Texas and California, at least for 7-Eleven stores, is to class them up a bit.
So give them tuxedos or something?
No, it's to play classical music in their stores. So a little Vivaldi will get you to go va-va-va-voom and get the hell out of my store.
So the homeless person is going to come in here, symphony number five, and be like, oh, whoa, I do not belong here.
Exactly. Some 7-Eleven convenience stores around the country, including Texas and California, have now started using roaring classical and opera music as a tactic to deter homeless people in ne'er-do-wells from camping out in front of their storefronts.
hey, is that Chopin? Yeah, we got to go. I cannot stand Chopin.
I can't stand these here classical instruments.
Let's go someplace where there's, you know, the Stones are playing.
That's right. One Texas 7-Eleven owner says the goal is to deter homeless individuals from being there and harassing customers. Some customers say they're all for the music, while others are annoyed by it. The store owner, Jagat Patel, says no one from the Austin Police Department has shown up, despite officials receiving multiple noise complaints from blasting classical tunes. He doesn't know whether the actual decibel level falls within city ordinance, but told Fox 7 that he's planning on lowering the volume on the classical music. Patel says the homeless population has been a big problem. Especially a lot of my female customers and my young customers are scared to come here because there are people constantly hanging out in the parking lot soliciting for money, he said. He says he's had to pay a professional to clean up needles. Others who work nearby say they've been attacked by homeless people. I have to carry this big old knife with me just to defend myself. It's sad that you have to do that, Joe Miranda. Joe Miranda sounds like a fake cop from the 50s, who works nearby, told Fox 7. Patel says he started playing the music about 10 days ago and got the idea because other store owners around the country began doing the same. Studies have shown that the classical music is annoying, opera is annoying, and I'm assuming that they are correct because it's working, he said. Since Patel and other businesses began playing classical and opera music, they've noticed a difference. Now, since they've had this music going on, we have less traffic down with the homeless out here, Miranda told Fox 7. Miranda says he thinks it's the right solution. It's helping out. It's not annoying to us because it doesn't bother us, but it bothers probably them because they're doing drugs, he said.
That's true. You don't hear meth ads going, you know what? I'm going to smoke this bowl and I'm going to blast some Tchaikovsky. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I'm going to hang out and hit this meth and do some Chopin. Others disagree, calling the music obnoxious while going shopping and filling up their tanks with gas. I believe just talk to them and ask them not to hang around or not to live around, whatever. I think that's the best solution. Frederick Carter, who lives nearby, went on to say, he said he started going to another nearby 7-Eleven store that doesn't have music playing. This music is not very good. It's loud. It's obnoxious to me. I don't like it. You can hear it a long ways off. It's very disturbing, he said. So some customers don't even like it, which is funny. Yeah. Texas convenience stores aren't the only store tapping into Mozart, Bach, and Beethoven. Bach. With 7-Elevens in California following suit. In Los Angeles, California, 7-Eleven owners began playing classical music to help employees and customers alike feel safe amid a continued spike in homelessness in the area. The owner of a California 7-Eleven, Suki Sandu, told the Modesto Bee that he began playing opera and classical music last year in an effort to drive out panhandlers and other loiterers from the convenience store. Once the music started, the riffraff left. Manuel Souza told the, it's funny that Souza is his last name.
Yeah.
Told the local paper, it's hard to hang out and gossip and joke around. Well, you know, I don't think they wrote that music hundreds of years ago thinking, you know something, Philip, one day we're going to get rid of the riffraff. I don't think they thought they were security systems back then.
No. See, I heard William Tell's Overture. The actual other name was it, is Get Off My Lawn, Homeless People. Da-da, that's what I thought it was.
Get off my lawn. My lawn.
That's what I thought it was.
Yeah, I hear it. Yeah, I bet. So that's Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals this week with a little side of Vivaldi.
we classed it up at the end there, didn't we?
We did. We put a little class in it. So remember, if your little ring camera doesn't work on your front porch, if your bear trap set up right by your door doesn't get somebody in a bind, just remember, a little bit of Bach or Beethoven played on your front porch will keep the nasties away.
I'll just start playing March of the Valkyries, see what happens.
Or Elmer Fudd. You should have a little Elmer Fudd singing along with it.
That is my favorite Looney Tunes episode ever.
Yeah. Elmer Fudd in a Viking helmet. on your front porch. We'll also get rid of any potential, any porch pirates or anybody potentially crashing into your home. That's it. That'll do it for today, folks. Tomorrow, Supernatural News. We've got Supernatural News for you tomorrow. And then the day after, boy, have I got a surprise for you, Bruiser.
What's going on Thursday?
The cast of Kindred Spirits.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Amy and Adam, right?
Amy and Adam, and potentially Uncle Chip himself, Chip Collins.
Really? Okay.
Potentially. I haven't been promised Uncle Chip will show, but there's a chance he might show.
So, even if he doesn't, Amy and Adam are good.
That's right. Amy and Adam will be with us. We'll talk the upcoming season, which debuts on both Travel Channel and on Discovery Plus this coming Friday. So,
I watch it religiously. I love it.
Yeah, so we'll talk to them about the upcoming season.
I've been watching Amy since she first debuted on Ghost Hunters, and then I watched Adam when he did the, what was it, Stephen, what'd they do, the looking for the Ghost Hunter. Remember when they used to do the class and Adam won it?
Oh, yeah.
Made the member of it.
Ghost Hunters then, Academy?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And then they went to Kindred Spirits, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's been a really, really good show. We're going to talk about the beginning of the season, what's going to differentiate this season from other seasons. And we're going to talk about their growth, not only as investigators, but their growth together as friends, and their growth on and off the show. So we're going to get into it a little bit this week. So, yeah.
Good to hear.
Going to be a good show. So
Amy's one of my favorites, I got to admit it.
Yeah, so that's coming up on Thursday. So that's going to be the week for Darkness Radio.
Nice.
Yeah. Big week this week. So, and we got some big weeks coming up, both for True Crime Tuesday and for Darkness Radio. We want to thank you for so much for continuing to listen, and send us some suggestions for guests. Send us some suggestions of who you want to hear here on the show. If you have a favorite guest you want to hear here on the show, just send it to tim@darknessradio.com. If you have stories you want to hear, or if you have guests, or if you have anything you want to hear on the show, tim@darknessradio.com. Also, rate and review us. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to the show. Rate and review us. We'd love to see those 5-star reviews. If you so are inclined, go ahead, rate and review us there as well. Folks, we'll see you tomorrow for the best in paranormal podcasting, Darkness Radio. And we want to thank you for listening today to the best in true crime podcasting. For Beer City Bruiser, I'm Tim Dennis, and this is True Crime Tuesday.